The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Cheers. This is bad.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode, I forgot I did that, 481 for the week of October 16, 2023. I am Dancing Bear David T. Cole, and I'm here with underperforming dinner party Sarah D. Bunting.
And scrambled eggs?
Extremely off-screen relative Tara Arianna. I guess she's not here. And Frazier's favorite thing, Andrew Cunningham.
Andrew has entered the building.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a writer, editor, appointment television co-host. You have heard him with us here before. Welcome back, Andrew Cunningham.
Welcome back,
Andrew. So nice to be back. Thanks for having me back.
It's so nice to have you to talk about Frazier. And we should know.
I love Frazier.
We're Frazier.
We're Frazier.
Nearly 20 years since we last saw Frazier Crane, Kelsey Grammer, in the series finale of his first eponymous sitcom, much has changed. For more than a decade, he's hosted a daytime talk show that has made him hugely famous and rich. He's broken up with Charlotte, the lady he finally got together with in that finale, spoiler from 2004, and he's lost his father, Martin, whose funeral he's coming from when we see him in the premiere of this eponymous sitcom. Frazier had been planning just to stop in Boston on his way to France for a book research trip, but then he drops in on his son, Freddie, now played by Jack Cutmore Scott, realizes how much of Freddie's life he has missed, and decides to stay in Boston and rebuild their relationship. The first two episodes dropped last Thursday on Paramount Plus. We got five. We will be mindful about specific plot spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Andrew, should our listeners watch this show?
I think no, with a very faint if.
Okay. Sarah?
No, thank you. No.
Dave?
I'm not mad at it. I'm just very disappointed. It's a no for me.
Yeah, it's a no for me, too. It's just unnecessary. Like, it's not like there wasn't enough Frazier to begin with.
Right.
There's a lot.
So if this show, Frazier 2.0,
yes,
was the exact same show, exact same script, but Frazier Crane's name was changed to Buddy Simpson.
Sure.
We wouldn't be talking about this show right now. Right. This would be another Hank, another Back to You. Mm-hmm. And if you don't remember those clearly, that's my point, because it is a by the numbers, middle of the road sitcom sort of affair, which is sad because Frazier is one of the great sitcoms that we've ever had. And this follow up seems really watered down and not considered.
I agree. So let's start here, because one of my issues with it, and I reviewed it, which we'll link in the show notes. There's very little continuity in the writing staff from the original show to here. I think there's one guy who came in like toward the end of the Frazier run who is also working on this. And I assume anyone they might have approached about doing this either has retired or didn't want to do it or said no thank you to the tiny pittance that Paramount was offering them versus what they got paid to do a network sitcom in the 90s and 2000s. But yesterday I learned that Joe Cristalli, who is one of the co-creators of this version of Frazier, used to write one of those like show today Twitter feeds about Frazier. And I felt like that explained a lot. Andrew, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it explains a lot, both good and bad, because those accounts, the hit rate is pretty low. Like they'll do like one good one every like two or three dozen tweets. And then the rest of them are like, I guess he had to tweet something today.
Yeah.
So I was never the biggest Craniac when the original show was on. I did watch it. This was the phase. I think I'm a little younger than y'all. So some background. For a while, I couldn't watch TV because there was an episode of The Simpsons in season two where Bart went to hell. And my mom decided that I just couldn't watch. couldn't watch network primetime television anymore.
Okay.
And so when I started watching it again in like high school, Frasier was one of the shows that was on. Like it was on in syndication already. It was like it was toward the end of the original run. And I always really enjoyed it. And then it went off the air and then I didn't really think about it again for many years.
Sure.
So it's the fun thing about this has been rewatching old episodes of the original Frasier, which still holds up. It's still like the character dynamics on that, the chemistry, the writing is all very good. It deserves its place in the like 90s sitcom firmament. This is not that. This is pretty bland, pretty disappointing. It made me think of Star Trek Picard to bring it back to a show that I'm that I also didn't like when it came back. Because the first 2 years of that, it was just Picard. And yes, he's the main guy, much like Frasier is the main guy in Frasier.
Sure.
But like so much of that show was the ensemble cast, and it's just so bewildering to bring back none of the ensemble as like regular cast in this. I just don't understand what the point of it is.
Yeah. There was a story earlier this year about the guy who played Stanley on The Office, like crowdfunding his own Stanley essentially spinoff. It's like the Grizz show that Liz comes up with at the end of 30 Rock, where it's just like, it's like the most basic version of trying to extend a brand of a show that people like. This feels like the same thing where like all these co-creators knew about Frasier is like, he's a fancy pants. And they went from there and like just didn't seem to know anything about his character from Cheers or the original Frasier, really. So I'm going to turn to Sarah, who recently completed a Cheers rewatch and went just slid right into Frasier after that. So Sarah, you are more familiar with this guy currently than probably any of us, and certainly more familiar than the people who are writing this show. What are your feelings about this? It was a hard no thank you. Say more.
I mean, I will say that I expected to despise this and struggle to complete an episode. Mm-hmm. I did watch two full episodes of the new version. And the thing is, like, it's not even like legendarily horrible. Mm-hmm. It's just not there. And, you know, my husband can attest that when we are watching original Frasier, we're around like early season six, I would say, is where we're at right now.
Yep.
We've been interrupted by playoff baseball, but speaking of things for old people that are boring, but the original Frasier, like, sometimes forgets things that about him as developed on Cheers, that like it is a little annoying to me that he's like, what is this sports ball of which you speak? And I'm like, you were in a fucking sports bar. You brought your kid to this fucking sports bar for like nine seasons. Why is this happening? Also, you killed off your father. Is anybody going to mention that ever again? No. Okay. But the writing, the editing, the way the ensemble works together in Frasier Prime means that you don't mind, you don't care about that stuff as much, and that the weave of it is so dense. There's like no, I mean, sometimes there is, but like overall, there's no sort of like standing back and smelling the fart of your jokes. There's no, like, obviously at this point in season six, there's no exposition about characters. There's no pilotiness. So I'm willing to grade on a curve for that stuff.
Yeah,
but it's just not tightly enough done. It's not, the cast is not uniformly good enough to carry what is a very clunky and superfluous first couple of episodes. And putting them side by side, it's like there were moments where I was like, okay, that is close. Like his professor friend and that badinage with him and like the provost is like, okay, well, but we already had that with him and Ross. Like we don't.
Yeah.
These are sort of pale copies. And then there's a scene with just talking about Martin's death. And it felt kind of cheap to me because I still really miss John Mahoney and, you know, wish he were still on this side of the veil. But it's like, it just, sometimes you could see that like outlines of what used to be, but then your first instinct is going to just be to go to Paramount Plus and watch the original. All this by way of saying, I thought this would be more disappointing, but A, it's plenty disappointing, and B, it's like, even if it were surprisingly good, it's still not necessary, like Andrew said. So,
yeah.
My comments, I guess, are also superfluous. Yeah. And Kelsey Grammer is like about to have an aneurysm in every scene, just like a hernia level of effort that's like, you can't get the band back together, but also the band is not even here.
Yeah,
it just made me tired and sad, kind of. I don't know if anyone else just felt deflated by watching it, but that's how it felt.
I mean, I think Kelsey Grammer, at least, like, he did this for like 20 years. He at least understands the rhythm of how to do like a hokey multi-camera sitcom punchline, right. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think that any of the other people on the show with him really, really get that. Like, you always have the sense that you're watching kind of a high school play.
Well, it in terms of so like cheap, set quality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, it really
does.
Yeah,
it's weird, right? Oof. Yeah. And I couldn't quite put my finger on why that was the case. Like the lighting, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like too broad. Mm-hmm. If the whole thing seemed cheap, I mean, I guess maybe that's why we're not seeing Niles at all. Mm-hmm. It's because they just knew from the get-go that they didn't have the money for any more names than Kelsey Grammer. So that was where they started, and all this forms around it. But even things like the quality of the sweetening of the canned laughter of the soundtrack is way off. But there is like a quality to good sweetening where you just don't like fade out the clapping and the laughter like it's fading to black in the moment, but it's not. Like stuff like that really is just like, okay, this is just not like a pride of ownership sort of project. That and things actually in the script, like, oh, here's a, you know, 3-minute Baby Shark song joke. I'm like, no, this is not. That belongs in some other show. And, you know, not getting into just like the things that like, why is Freddy the way he is now? Like where they missed the connective tissue between series and things like that were kind of head scratchers. And I'll just let you know, 5 episodes in, you're no closer to knowing any of that.
No, it's true. I mean, like setting the show back in Boston, I feel like that sets them up for so many avoidable errors. You know what I mean? Like not errors, but just like there's no other way to say it. Mistakes? No, that's the same thing. Where it's just like, they could sidestep the whole thing if we were in Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, then you wouldn't have the Freddy aspect. But on the other hand, like, then you wouldn't have the Freddy aspect. Like, this guy is not the character that we got to know. Admittedly, he was a kid in Frasier. But the last time we see him, he's like a little goth weirdo. Before
he's
that,
a goth
boy. He's a Chef's Club guy. Like, he's more like Niles than he is like Frasier in the original series. He's like a super nerd. And that's not to say you can't grow up and be a different kind of person. Yeah. But there's no indication in these first 5 episodes of like how that happened, other than like he loved his grandpa and he wanted to be a first responder, but not a cop. Like, it's just so weird.
Well, and then get a guy who can actually sell any of this. Like, this is the other problem. Like, it's not dense enough. Like, the weave of the writing is not dense enough, and the weave of the performances are not dense enough. And you have a couple of people who, as Andrew referred to, like, it does seem like this is their first big job, and there's a lot of high school like hit mark, look up, declaim acting going on. But the dude who plays Freddy, it's not that he's bad, it's not a good fit with the material, and he's not selling it.
Yes. He's also English, so, and I felt like I could tell. Andrew, talk about Freddy.
Yeah, he's so not to spoil things from later in the run. I think that the one of these 5 that worked the most for me is the 4th episode, which does dive a little bit deeper into the father-son dynamic, which I think was, you know, Frasier became more about the Frasier-Niles dynamic, but the Frasier-Martin dynamic was like the foundation of what that show was. And I think it kind of almost maybe kind of gets a little bit back to it in episode 4. But again, that's way more about what Kelsey Grammer is bringing to it than what Freddy is bringing to it.
Yeah.
And I'd say the same thing for pretty much everybody. Like, I guess I'm glad that Frasier wants to reconnect with his son, because Niles and Daphne are just like not in their kid's life at all. the cousin, what's his name? David. Cousin David. Mm-hmm. His character is also pretty bad. He's up there on the bad list for me, of just like nothing character. So I'm not sure what they're doing here except to like try and like fake a connection back to the original show that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
I don't know. How did he hit you guys?
Well, it's like they've split Niles into two characters, and one of them is David and the other is Alan, who is Frasier's colleague at Harvard, which, sidebar, if Frasier is this rich, why does he have a job like this? We find out in the third episode, like, the job is not satisfying. He finds it really frustrating. It's like, if you are rich enough to do, I mean, I'll just say it because it's narrative, to buy an entire apartment building so that you can connect with your kids, why are you taking a one-day-a-week job at Harvard? Like, just don't do it.
Because Harvard is like his hot rod car in your 60s, right?
I guess. Yes.
To him,
sure,
that is like a goal.
Right.
I mean, does he need to do it? No. Should he do it? No.
Yeah.
But I kind of get why he would, ego-wise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, the thing about this show, too, is like, it, for me, at least, it invited tinkering. Like, when that happened, I was like, well, what if it was Frasier doesn't have a job and he's around all the time and that's what's bothering Freddie, or he's like picking up weird hobbies that are irritating in their shared apartment. It's just like, I don't know why the writers didn't think of these things before they made a show. Instead, left it to me to think of this instead, because
anyway. Where's the odd couple of it all?
Have him teach at Cambridge Community College. Like, I don't know how you get that to reverse engineer that to happen, but you know, there are recessions, there are, you know, online scams that he could have fallen for because he's Frasier. I mean, I don't know, like, and there was also hearing a no from Hyde Pierce and being like, okay, the universe has spoken, we're not doing this. That would be my tweak, would be to take a hint from
better judgment. Yes.
Ancestors. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. One of the lines from that article where they, and from Vulture, where they talked about the Twitter feed, was where one of the co-creators was like, we worked with him for a long time. Originally, the idea was that like Niles and Frasier buy a black box theater and run it together. And then they worked on that for a while. And then David Hyde Pierce finally was like, okay, it's a no for me. But the way they quoted him on it was he acknowledged it was funny, which is like such a self-slam, such a dark way to put it, where it's like, yes, sure, all right, yes, it's fine for others, just not for me, where it's like, listen to the man's taste.
We will exchange Christmas cards and we will see you next year. Goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, we've already said it. All of these characters are worse copies of what we had in the original show. And like, if you don't have a different enough idea of what to do with this, or if the different idea you had gets poo-pooed by one of the key people that was supposed to be in it, like, yeah, like Sarah said, take a friggin' hint, because all of this is not it. And even the Alan guy, he's like, he's from Only Fools and Horses. He's like, he's a sitcom legend too. And he's so boring to watch. And like Alan, our friend, and we'll link his review too, Alan Sepinwall, was like, if they've been friends for this long, where was Alan in the Cheers years? Also, sidebar, where's Cheers? Like, if he's drinking in this new place and making reference to it, I know why they're not going there, because someone bought the set and they can't afford it or whatever. But like, is Cheers still open? What is the story? It's just like, all of these are problems you could have avoided by setting it any other place, including Seattle. Like, just because your star was like, I don't want to go back here, I want to do something different, it's like, you don't have to do that just because he says it. Like, he's not a writer. He's never been a writer on this show. I don't know why he is one of the creative forces behind it now, which it seems like he is, because he's the famousest one in it.
Yeah, when you watch kind of a nothing-y show like this, I find myself looking for other shows that I would rather be watching.
Yeah.
And for this, for Frasier, the new Frasier, the shows I'd rather be watching are the in-universe Dr. Phil talk show that he apparently hosted in Chicago for 10 years.
Yes, make it a
work.
And
a show about the squad of firefighters who Freddie works with, who have more of a rapport like in their very limited screen time than like any of the other like main.
If you want that, Andrew, and you haven't watched it, I would recommend Sirens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All
right. Because
which is
one of the firefighters
is in Sirens.
Is in Sirens. Kevin Daniels, who I think we all want better for him than this, than to play Tiny on Frasier.
Can we sign off on one note of positivity about Frasier? The one joke that I genuinely laughed at?
Sure. Yes.
I forget the exact wording, but it was something like Frasier saying, I can't decide between the Davenport and the Chesterfield. It's a real sofa's choice. Mm-hmm. I laughed and then I hated myself for laughing. And I thought, you know what? We're good. That was a solid dad joke. All right, it's time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara. Choo-choo. It's a train now, again.
Oh, okay. Around the dial of the train.
Yeah, you know how trains go around circles.
Sure. Shining Vale Season 2 is out on Stars. It is a horror comedy that B stars a former Friends cast member, and it C is on Stars. I will admit, while none of these conditions individually is disqualifying, all three together meant I was never that curious about it. And then I got resigned to review it with a deadline 2 days sooner than I expected, which meant I watched 12 episodes in an evening and the last four the next morning, starting when it was still dark out, which is either the worst way to watch the show or the best. And now I think it's good.
Well, I don't know. There's something very, it's like Bart flying a kite at night, watching a horror show in the morning. Yeah. Unwholesome.
Yes. Sitting on the bed in my office watching the last four episodes of Shining Vale Season 2. Anyway, for starters, it was co-created by Sharon Horgan of Catastrophe and Bad Sisters fame, which in my opinion should have been much more of what the marketing leaned on, because I didn't realize that until I watched it. Co-created by Jeff Astroff. He had previously created the show Trial and Error, very funny legal comedy. Also worked on Angie Tribeca, very silly as well. He's got good chops too. I'm just going to be sexist and attribute most of what is good about the show to Sharon Horgan, because it's about a female protagonist who is a writer and kind of hates her family. And as we all know, that's Sharon Horgan's brand. So Courtney Cox plays Pat. Before she got married and had kids, she wrote a work of erotica that was hugely popular and successful, but that was 17 years ago, and her follow-up novel is very overdue. Also, in the recent past, when we meet her, she has just had a brief affair with the family's handyman, but she and her husband, Terry, who's played by Greg Kinnear, so good, we'll come back to him, have decided to stay together and move the family from Brooklyn to a weird old mansion in Connecticut. They spent literally every cent they have on it. Turns out the Shining part of the title is not an accident, because the house is haunted, which starts to affect Pat's writing process. The first season ends even more catastrophically than Catastrophe, and I'm not supposed to say which horror movies the second season borrows from, which sucks, because it's much more wide-ranging and has a lot more to say about women aging in patriarchy. That is interesting, but given the shit that Courtney Cox has had to take about changes she has made to her appearance over the course of her life, this feels like a rich topic for her to get to explore. Like Frasier Crane, Courtney Cox is rich enough to never have to work again if she doesn't want to, but I love that both she and Sarah Jessica Parker have decided to work with Sharon Horgan after their other successful long-running sitcoms ended, and in both cases, makes me respect those actors more than I might have otherwise, actually. If she doesn't do it for you, supporting cast includes Maren Dungey, Judith Light, Gus Burney from Dickinson, Alicia Reiner from Orange is the New Black, and Greg Kinnear seriously is so good and so funny, especially in season two when he has to do some very different stuff that I won't spoil. And you see his butt, and his butt looks pretty good. So if you wish, you can read my review of season two, even though, like I said, it's very spoiler redacted. And if you have Stars, give it a shot. Sarah, after I watched it, I was like, Sarah might like this, even though it's not really her thing. But okay. Yeah, it's, you know, it's ghosty. It's writery. Those are things you enjoy.
I mean, it's Horgan-y, though. Sometimes I'm not a Horgan guy.
Well,
I'll try it, though. Why not?
All right.
I like butts.
Sound clip.
You can stop there.
Cannot lie.
All right, Andrew, what do you got for us?
All right, I'm bringing an old one. I'm currently digitizing my old DVD collection because, you know, just like stuff disappears now with no warning and for no reason. So I recently did my beloved Home Movies box set. Home Movies is a cartoon that ran mostly on Adult Swim in the very early 2000s. Hideously ugly show, even at the time, I think. Mm-hmm. It was animated with Flash, which I think is the same thing that they use to make like Homestar Runner cartoons. So that's the sort of level of visual effects that we're talking about.
It was originally in Squigglevision, wasn't it?
Originally yes. In like Dr. Cat's Squiggle Vision, though they did drop that. it is co-created by Brendan Small, who also did Metalocalypse, and Lauren Bouchard, who is best known for Bob's Burgers, which I think is in its 14th season now. That show's been running for a long time.
Yep.
But it's kind of a proto Bob's Burgers in a lot of ways. Like if you really like that show, especially the parts of that show that are just like two voice actors like deadpanning a hilarious conversation about nothing to each other. That's the lane that Home Movies is in most of the time. Still on Max for now. Who knows for how long that's going to last. Right. And I would just probably skip most of the first season. Look up the Franz Kafka rock opera on YouTube and watch that, and then skip the rest of the first season and just watch 2, 3, and 4. Some very funny movie parodies, some funny like genre pastiche stuff. It's the core premise is these kids get together and they film bad home movies with their camcorder, and the sort of the concepts that they come up with. The one I was watching last night is from season 2, is called Pizza Club, and the movie that they're making in that one is about two escaped convicts who loved and slept with the same woman on the same night at the same time. And so neither of them knows who's the real dad of the daughter that they're trying to raise together, even though they're still handcuffed together because they just escaped from prison. That's it. It's absurdist. It's fun conversation. It's super short to watch. It's like 3 worthwhile seasons of 13 episodes each. So yeah, that's it.
I recently came across the compliment song from the Starboy episode and reminded me how much I love the show. Yeah, great pick.
Yeah.
Anything to plug?
Yeah, I recently wrote about season 2 of Wheel of Time at Ars Technica. You can find me there under my byline. And then Appointment Television with Tara. Relatively recently, we did a full series watch of Amazon Prime's Citadel.
Can I give you a personal thank you for doing that? Because that siphoned off a lot of Tara's In This House anti-Citadel energy. So yes. I didn't have to hear about it. And you guys sort of took the brunt of it. So
I'm happy to do that.
That's all true.
Yes.
All right, Sarah, what have you been watching recently?
Oh, boy. Well, speaking of people spending their whole life savings on a house that is like evidently haunted from the jump, I am here to talk about American Horror Story: Roanoke. I can't recall what or who reminded me that American Horror Story had a Roanoke season, and I'm really risking turning my little corner of Around the Dial, not that trains do corners, but so sorry, Dave, into the Murphy Falchuk non-family fun hour. But I thought I would check it out, or maybe check it out again. It debuted in the fall of 2016, and given the other shit that was going on at that time, it's entirely possible that I started it once already and just blocked it out. For the record, I did check on this, and Tara and our esteemed colleague Eve Beatty talked about it on EHG 135, Were We Ever So Young. They seem to dig it. Tara can tell me if I should keep going, if she remembers anything about that season. You listeners can get on our Discord or at me on Blue Sky, but unless I hear otherwise from people I trust, I'm going to bail. After one episode, I went back to it because I had forgotten it, but I am low-key obsessed with the Roanoke colony story. Like, we'll read PDFs of people's history master's thesis online, obsessed, which... actually, I guess it's not that low key, but anywho, I tried an episode of this, and with respect for the Blair Witchy paranormally active references that they're trying to make, I think I would rather just rewatch those for spoopy season. I did read some rankings of all of the seasons of American Horror Story by critics whose taste, even if I don't share it, I can at least map onto mine and have it be predictive. I do know the so-called twist in this season. As a result of that, and because it's not front-loaded enough in this season of American Horror Story, and because all those rankings lists tended to mention that franchise MVP Sarah Paulson thought this outing was bogus, I just feel like I might have better things to do with my time. Happy to discuss, but before I discuss, know this, I'm that one person who didn't think the Coven season was all that. AMA. It was fine. I'm glad people dug it. I thought it was boring. Asylum or get the fuck out. So that's where I stand. Tara, anything to add right now?
No, Asylum is probably still my favorite season too. I don't know. You can stop. I don't remember this one being super great, but I did cover it on previously.tv, so you can just read my coverage if you care to. I'm reminded as I looked it up that I called the 4th episode American Horror Story adds the velveteen touch of a dandy fop. So that amused me a second time. It's a reference to Mr. Show.
great.
There's no reason to commit to any of these. If it doesn't get you from the beginning, it's probably not going to get you later. Life is short.
Yeah, that's my feeling. For my plug, speaking of Eve Beatty, she and I have a true crime review newsletter. It comes out weekdaily, and this week we are talking about, among other things, real people suing scripted true crime productions that made them look like assholes, Gypsy Blanchard getting parole, and why venture capitalists might pass on a true crime website. That is all at bestevidence.fyi. Come on through.
All right, I got two follow-ups to two shows that I kind of watched the start of, but never got to the end of before we had to talk about them on our shows. Number one is Netflix, The Devil's Plan. That is the Korean reality show that is almost like an exact copy of The Genius, a show we talked about years ago, but just has a couple tweaks to it. Love this series now that we've watched the whole thing.
It's so good.
The last episode competition wasn't really well constructed. It was a little bit weak compared to what came before it. Spoiler, don't set yourself up for failure by making the finals a best out of three.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody wins two in a row, you're like, oh,
yep.
And that's what happened. Spoiler. Money on that format changing if they do a second season. I hope they do. Otherwise, super solid, fun reality show that is both smarter and friendlier than anything you will watch in America. And it kind of got to me that, like, you all know, I don't really like reality shows that much. And I'm not a everybody needs to be nice to each other type of person. You all know that too.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about the mix here that really made it extremely watchable. The other thing they did that seems different from other reality shows, and this might be the key to like how well it was paced, is they didn't edit the episodes down to like, this is a day, or this is an edit down to the elimination of the episode. But rather they edited it down to exciting narrative points.
Yep.
In the story that the story editor crafted. So a day on the show could be half an episode or it could be three episodes, depending on how they wanted to roll with it. And it really pays dividends. There is not a jump to credits at the start of the show or at the end credits. So you're not like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're like the games they're playing are like logic puzzles and mathematics stuff and memory things and like game theory games. It's not like Survivor or anything like that. And there's like a sub game where like there's a prison somebody gets sent to and there's like something going on there too. But it's not like high kinetic games. They're like, they're all just like standing around thinking, strategizing and stuff. But then when something happens, you're like, oh, fuck, this is the best thing I've ever seen. Dopamine rush every time they do that. So anyways, Devil's Plan, if you haven't checked it out yet, go into it. It's really good. It's a show you cannot second screen because it's obviously all subtitled. So know that going into it. The other show is our extra, extra hot, great topic from last week. It is The Fall of the House of Usher. I said there that after watching the screeners that were provided in advance, I really liked what I saw. But the question would be if they could pull it all together at the end. What we saw, you can consider them or view them as vignettes of something. And I wasn't quite sure if it was going to coalesce.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, I think they largely pulled it off.
Yeah.
Like the identity of Verna in the first episode, like wasn't a big surprise, but I don't really know if it was ever really supposed to be a big surprise. Mm-hmm. Like when you're dealing with taking the collective works of Poe, putting them in a blender and trying to make one narrative out of it, you're going to deal with a lot of cliches because that's where a lot of cliches came from in American writing, horror writing was Poe.
Yeah.
So I forgive it that. I don't think that is like a bad thing. The final episode's hook was the Raven. Like every episode has a callback to a Poe work. And hats off to the production and hats off to Bruce Greenwood for pulling off a reading of the Raven in that episode. Because don't forget, we live in a post-Simpsons did it world when it comes to the Raven. Whenever you hear somebody read that, and I'm not really conversant in Poe, so the only thing I know is The Raven Nevermore, like 99% of the people out there. But they pulled it off, and it works, and I wasn't like, I feel weird about this. You know what I mean? Like, it feels not right because it's a cartoon poem kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, it's also not the whole thing. That also, that helps too.
Sure.
It's the highlights.
Right. So I thought that was pretty good that they could actually make all that work in this, you know, 2023. Mm-hmm. If I could take out one thing, there is a line that the Verna character says, I think in the last episode, maybe the second last episode, it's a reference to Trump shooting somebody, you know, in the street and getting away with it.
Yeah.
Someone of that lineage would not give two shits about Trump.
No.
And I thought that was like a writer, delicious. And it was just like, no, it was not in character. It should not have been in the show.
No, and it also like pinpoints it in time, which like obviously it's a topical story. It's like a Sackler thing. But even that, like on top of everything else, it's like just it's not necessary. Yep. We all know who the bad people are in real life. It's not you don't need to include him here as well.
But yeah, great October show. Mm-hmm. I would check it out if you haven't. It is gross in parts if you haven't listened to our discussion on Extra Extra Great. It's kind of gross. If you're okay with that, absolutely watch it.
I'd also say the goriness is telegraphed. You can see, you know when it's coming. I was watching it under my blanket.
For sure.
Pulled up to my nose. So yeah, you can look, you know when to look away.
All right. Coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this week, it is, Sarah, can you hit me with it?
Colon Legacy.
Thank you. That is available to supporters. You go to extrahotgreat.com/club to join. We got, of course, other things to go along with that. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, it's Netflix Bodies. And we welcome back Devendra Hardawar for that.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. This week comes from Aaron. And before I start, I will say, if you're listening with your kids,
thank you.
You might want to, I don't know, shove them out the car or wherever you are and then have them come back in about 15 minutes.
Switch over to Baby Shark just for a minute.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Here we go.
You, rookie, stay here and watch the big man. Everyone else grab a weapon and a snack and follow me.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. Today, I am submitting The Venture Brothers, Season 4, Episode 16, Operation PROM for the canon. I've always been a little surprised that for a podcast named after a Venture Brothers joke, you've only ever discussed the show once as a canon submission. So I'm going to fix that. That's right. I'm here to melt your brain and expand your mind with my heaviness. The Venture Brothers has always been at its heart a passion project, one that weathered many storms across its 7-season, 20-year expanse. It is, if nothing else, the strange singular vision of its two primary creative forces, Doc Hammer and Jackson Publick, whose credits on the show range from doing music and most of the voice acting to production, writing, and direction. Operation Prom is the double-length season 4 finale, and aside from being a pretty fun episode of television, really serves as the fulcrum for the show overall. Part of the reason it is such a crucial transition point is that it was once supposed to be the series finale, and season 5 didn't air until almost 3 years later. In many ways, Operation Prom is a sequence of fond remembrances that seem fitting for a permanent ending. We check in with just about every character the show has taken time to craft, and each get their weird, stupid moment in the sun. The Venture Brothers definitely indulged in its share of lore building over the years, a lot of which makes an appearance here, but it never lost sight of the character work that made it great. Operation Prom is really about how this community of freaks is a weird family, but the kind that gets in absurd, drunken, crying slap fights on the front lawn and has way too much gross body stuff going on. This episode is in many ways so dense and layered in both plot and character stuff that it feels almost contrary to the spirit of the thing to try and describe it. So I'll keep it short. Hank and Dean have graduated from their creepy learning beds and are now enduring the frankly horrifying prospect of a homeschool prom thrown by their dad. Dean predictably wants to bring Triana as his friend. Well, Hank has his eyes set slightly higher, but eventually settles for Dermot. The grown-ups immediately take over the party, really just getting up to all the irresponsible hijinks they fear the kids will engage in. Henchman 21 is trying to make a break from not only the constant haunting of his dead best friend 24, but eventually from the monarch and the life of henching altogether. Meanwhile, there are some higher level factional coups and counter coups involving the capture of Monstroso, and Colonel Gathers eventually takes over as the new head of OSI, thereby undisavowing the Sphinx team. Finally, Molotov Cocktease appears to liberate the real Monstroso, who she's fallen in love with, and threatens the unwitting partygoers with assassins disguised as sex workers. The whole thing ending with the women turning into hideous vomiting bug creatures because of Doc's mutant Spanish fly and Brock throwing himself gleefully into the murderous fray is about the best curtain you could ask for with this show. Until Dean does an accidental KKK rally on Triana's front lawn. While watching this whole thing is 100 times better than any retelling and listing all the good stuff would take forever, I do still need to at least get a few highlights out. One, everything Shoreleaf says and does in this episode is perfect, and he's my angel. He even makes hatred momentarily bearable, albeit by bullying the shit out of him. Two, Raven's greeting, "Hey, starry eyes," is the most perfect encapsulation of why I asked Drink Boy bullshit I've ever heard. Three, the fantastic payoff on a throwaway joke earlier in the series about Hank's most formative crush.
Oh, hell no! Not this crap again.
Your carriage awaits, m'lady. Ready to whisk you away to an evening of prom enchantment.
I am not in the mood for this. I'm just your damn postal carrier. You got it?
We both know the score, pretty mama. Don't fight this crazy love.
Boy, I'm 46, okay? I have 2 sons that are older than you.
Age ain't nothing but a number, baby. And isn't it high time those boys met mommy's new beau?
Four, Toby Huss's whole performance as General Traister, but particularly the confession of his condition to Colonel Gathers.
What are you clowns doing here?
Now they're just being good soldiers. I gave them orders to restrain me whenever I have one of my fitting spells.
What is it, sir? Your heart?
This titanium ticker will still be beating out Semper Fidelis when there's nothing left of me but worm turds.
Nothing. What's happening, sir?
Cripes! Didn't want you to have to see me this way. Guess the cat's out of the pajamas now, huh? All right, I might as well level with you. I'm a Hulk.
Five, every part of the weird welcome 21 gets into the Venture Hold is so much sweeter than it has any right to be. Six, Monarch and Dr. Mrs. the Monarch crashing the party with the pretense of menace, but really they're just there to dance BTMI about their sex lives and fail to vanish after a villainous monologue and puff of smoke. Seven, Brock's 2 great chase sequences ending with a genuinely emotional confrontation with Maul. And of course, finally, the round robin debate of what exactly a rusty Venture is. It's crass and fucked up, but it is quintessentially Venture Brothers and really gives perfect opportunity for the extended cast to just go ham.
Oh, you like that, don't you? How about I take you to my boudoir and give you a little rusty Venture?
Whoa! Dean, not!
Well, what was that about?
Boom! Right out of the gate, you asked for a rusty Venture. That is bold, my friend. Kudos.
What? I have chill bubbly in my room.
Rust. You do realize that a rusty Venture is when you take your finger and run it around a guy's asshole while you pull the guy off into his own face.
What? My name is a sex act? When did that happen?
Like in the 80s, and Al is way off. A rusty Venture is when you 69 and you fill each other's mouth with cum, and then you turn over and blow spooge into each other's crack.
Good lord! How can that be named after me? What does it have to do with me?
Oh, don't play coy. Your cartoon was huge in the gay community. We used to throw rusty Venture parties in the Castro. We'd all wear little striped tops and tight little shorts.
How did you not know this? Man, you're like a little Twinkie Cher. A ginger freaking Liza Minogue.
No, I miss this. I don't 69 guys and do that spitting thing.
That's not a rusty Venture, that's a snake venom.
Ugh. You are misinformed, my darling. You want to settle this? Maybe make a little wager?
Fine. I'll bet you a rusty Venture I'm right.
Stop it. You are on. I am going to call an authority on both subjects.
Yellow? No, sure. I am the one who started that craze back in P-Town with Tennessee Williams. It's brilliant! What you do is you take a scuba snorkel and you put your cock in the wee bendy mouth part. Then you sneak the other end right up your back address, okay? Then you just grab the middle of that snorkel and you're fucking your own ass and pulling it off your crank at the self-same time until you're spending your own jacksy. That's a rusty Venture. Misha? Misha! No! Bad girl!
Useless! That was Colonel Gemini. And the out-of-touch old windbag just described a double frogman.
Give me your phone.
Yo, I told you, when your arch is terminated by a third party, it's not our problem. A what? Well, of course I do. It's when you fist a guy and then you open up your hand inside his ass and grab the... No, no, he's laying down. Then whatever you come out with, you rub on his dick.
Wrong! The Rusty Venture is a straight move. Okay, it's when you take a girl out for a huge dinner, but you don't let her go to the can. Then you have anal sex with her and she craps all over your dick. So right when you're about to get off, you take it out and you blow shit cum on her back.
That's a Rusty Venture?
That's the Rusty part. The venture part is when you eat that junk off her back without using your hands.
Are you getting this?
Yeah, I heard it, and you're both wrong. To settle a bet... Yes, with shore leave.
I don't care anymore. And frankly, I'm disgusted that my good name is being used for this baloney.
This is not over until one of us gets a Rusty Venture.
Agreed.
I think in the end, though, we're probably all inclined to agree with Brock on this one.
I'm going to give you a Rusty Venture.
Don't believe the hype. A Rusty Venture is the name for when you jerk off so much your dick gets all red and sore.
Really?
Yeah.
Operation Prom is breathlessly kinetic. The moment you've acclimated to one setup or joke, you're rocketed to the next. It's sweet and stupid and repulsive in equal measure. It's you laughing when your sibling farts and it really stinks, like, really? And yes, it's possible the episode is all just hand jobs for the faithful, and anyone who didn't spend decades being even slightly interested in it won't appreciate it that much. But consider me among the chosen. Here, everyone's invited to prom, and I sure as hell am going to put on a tux. Good luck with your decision, and thanks so much.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God, Aaron, that was gorgeous. But I also have to just add, because no one but me, I think, saw her, got to see Sarah's reaction to finding out that Mol was short for Molotov Cocktease, because she is not a watcher of the show, and that's how she found out in the presentation.
I am so curious what the... uninitiated think of this episode, because it is deep in the weeds on Venture Brothers.
Yeah, normally we go to our guest first, but yes, let's get Sarah to go first, because the rest of us have all watched it. So Sarah, please start.
Let me read to you from my notes. Frankly, I have zero idea what the fuck is going on here, but I don't care. Andrew?
It is very much like a microcosm of the Venture Brothers in that way. Like it's very funny. It's a little nihilistic. It's a little bit about found family, like down at the bottom once you dig. But if you have not watched like 7 years worth of cartoons, like 3 times, you're going to be completely out to sea on anything that's going on.
But yeah, I mean, not really. Like the mm-hmm. spirit of it spoke to me.
Sure. Yes.
It was like Archerian. But mm-hmm. in the good way and not mm-hmm. in the, like, excessively proud of itself for a theme season way that started to happen in later seasons. There are also, like, little runners that I think, you know, if you're a repeat viewer, that's probably more rewarding. But, like, the mid-century lingo of the colonel's attachés, piss off, crapo. And then instead of get it, they're like, savvy. I wrote all of them down because it was really like just this love letter to post-war rat-a-tat lingo and argo that I thought was great. I mean, mm-hmm. I laughed a bunch of times, and this is a good like test balloon or like sure. invitation to get into the show, because mm-hmm. you don't know what's going on and you don't have to, but you're intrigued. Mm-hmm. And it still has something to offer somebody who never watched it before.
I'm still winded from laughing so low.
Okay, let's go back to Andrew.
I mean, she did miss the one part of the Rusty Venture runner where Triana looks it up on Urban Dictionary and makes Dean yell about poop hand jobs to her. Mm-hmm. So yeah. There's that. But yeah, like this season 4 of this show is really interesting, because the first 3 seasons of Venture Brothers revolved around kind of a status quo that the show would return to. Like, it would change things within those, but the basic formula stayed the same. And then the show like literally blew that up at the end of the 3rd season by killing one character, and then also killing all of the clones of Hank and Dean that Dr. Venture had used to revive them when they died.
Yeah.
And kind of freeing them from an arrested development that was caused by them like getting repeatedly rebirthed over and over again with like mm-hmm. long gaps in between. So yeah, a lot of characters like grow up and change in season 4, like Hank and Dean do. Henchman, is it 21? 21 is. Henchman 21 does when he's dealing with the death of his friend. Like, I think the prom episode puts a really nice cap on that season of development for everybody, while also being just like completely quintessentially Venture Brothers. Like, I've never really liked the early interview takeaway that people come away with about the show, where it's about failure. Like, I think the creators said that in an early interview, and it still gets quoted a lot. But the part of the show that's about like finding your people, even if they're like weird and twisted and like scientifically unethical, is what keeps me like coming back to it. Like, I think my favorite little scene in the entire episode, and there are a lot of great scenes, but the one I always think of when I think of this is just that bit with Billy Quizboy and Dr. Venture in his lab trying to bottle the the homemade like sex, the Spanish fly that they're making.
Yes.
Dr. Venture tells Billy, don't touch it, about the fly that they're extracting the stuff from, because it's literally a giant mutant fly. Don't touch it. It's fragile. And when it's mad, it spits acid. And it's already mad because I pulled its wings off.
Yeah.
But just everything about this show over and over again just finds two characters that are fun and finds a million reasons to put them in a room together and just let them talk for a while.
Yep.
The other one like that with Quizboy is when they're ordering the sex workers and he's negotiating a price and trying to figure out what type of sex workers he can get. And Quizboy's there asking like slightly probing questions, but not really getting to it. And then after a few questions, you realize he just really wants one of them to dress up like Hot Girl. I was like, aw. That's cute and creepy.
Yeah.
In equal measures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, it's hard for me if with any given episode of Avenger Brothers, it'd be really hard for me to say, you know, put this in the canon because of the entire body of work. You know, like when you give an Oscar to somebody at the end of their career, even though the movie that they've been nominated for isn't that great.
Yeah.
But this episode is definitely a peak. It's definitely a dividing line between like late run Venture Brothers and what the show was when it started. I think I really like this episode. I really like the show. If I don't end up rewatching it again as a result of watching this episode, I will be surprised.
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I am right now.
I'll go next. The richness, I mean, Sarah already mentioned Archer, and I think that's a good analog just in terms of like the sheer range of references you're going to get in it. Because in this one episode, you get Andrea Dworkin, the YA trend of like having a boyfriend who's going to die someday, which is what we see with Triana's boyfriend, Raven, who shows up on crutches. I mean, he might be fine, but whatever. And then like that one of the two men in black, their dough and card holder, like what you would see on a credit card solicitation, like Robert card holder. It's just such a stupid, dumb, hilarious reference. Mm-hmm. As someone who works with her spouse, I've always enjoyed the relationship of Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend. This gives us all something, I think, to aim
Wait,
for.
Who's who? Who's who?
I think you know. Yeah, that when they're in the car, that's like maybe submersible, and then it's like, oh no, whoops, it's not. What do we have? Cup holders? Like, it's just... And Brock gets a great moment to be Brock. I mean, Aaron is so right that there's so much sweetness in this episode. I do, you know, you can tell when she says it, like, oh, of course, this could have been a series finale if it needed to be. But he gets one last chance to kick ass. Like, anytime Brock is saving the family, it's like weirdly rousing. It's sort of like how I feel about Helper, even in this era when it's like Helper Spider. It's like Helper is the best character. Helper never speaks, and Helper is so sweet and lovely. Like Helper is my fave. This goes so many places. Aaron hit on most of them. She's absolutely right about Shore Leave. Shore Leave is great. Every single Shore Leave has a 100% hit rate for every line in this episode.
Shore Leave spinoff.
Yeah. And like, who would have thought Shore Leave plus The Alchemist? And then you see it and you're like, hell yeah. Like, absolutely. Yeah. Get together.
When he sees Al on the camera at the start, Al's got a kilt on, he's like, oh, he's like a little Braveheart.
Yeah. This is the show in microcosm. It's everything that the show does well. Mm. And the Sergeant Hatred stuff is not great, but no. Aaron is right that the Shore Leave stuff balances it out. And so I loved watching this again. And I also agree with Andrew, like, maybe it's time to watch this again. I think we watched it 2 years ago, but 2 years is a long time. So, Dave.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's so many, like, weirdly sweet moments trapped in shit amber here, you know, that are, it's just like a weird sort of like emotional order of operations formula for a lot of these things. Like the one of my favorite parts we did talk about, because it's visual, is during that whole scene, that the big 3 minute long Rusty Venter scene when they call the Sean Connery character, Sean Connery's working on the model of the USS Indianapolis as it's being sunk. Yes. And all the sailors have jumped off the ship, you know, the story as heard in Jaws. The ship is on top of the dog. And then then it's sort of like mounted on like a dog coat, like a thunder shirt kind of thing almost. And then on the thunder shirt, there's all these little sailors and rafts and like fins sticking out. It's so dumb. It's so stupid. Yeah. There is an appearance by Tim Tom and Kevin, the murderous Moppet.
Yes.
As they, I'm just going to play that because, again, it's super gross. And somehow this episode just gets away with it all.
Where's 21?
They gave us $20 note to tell you he went to the Venture Compound.
The Venture Compound?
You want us to find him?
Torture him?
Cut out his eyes?
Then pee in the empty socket?
Oh, you want us to take a whiz all over his brain?
What's wrong with you two? No, I don't want you to piss on him, you sickos!
I always love that the Monarch is not the worst in his crew at any time. It's great. Lost a little touch. Is the end scene, the end like cell where Colonel America, I forget his name, but he decides that Earth has no solution for his condition. So he loads himself into the Avengers-esque floating aircraft carrier torpedo tube or whatever and fires himself out into space towards the moon.
Yeah.
And the last scene is just him leaving the atmosphere with a post-it note on his chest that says, fix it. With a giant grin on his face underneath his handlebar mustache.
His ailment is not that he's a Hulk, but it's that he has, quote, pee-pee cancer.
That's right. Yeah, fix it.
Oh my god, yeah. And the only part of this episode I generally don't like is the Sergeant Hatred Princess Littlefeet thing. Sergeant Hatred was always poison for any episode he was in. He was never a good character, and they never leavened him with anything, and he always came across as somebody who might have like illegal porn on his hard drive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
and they never found a way to make it work comedically. And I feel the same way. Here, the scenes with Shore Leave do work for the exact reason that Aaron said, is because he is taking the piss out of him at every opportunity. And that character deserves that.
Yep.
But it was too much of him before that. And so that's my only knock against this episode. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just like everybody gets their moment. It's great.
In that way, it is still like a microcosm of the Venture Brothers, because occasionally you would hit some character or some subplot that they just wanted to do because the whole show was made by two guys and they both thought this was funny.
Yes.
And, you know, their hit rate is really good. They don't get them all.
The last thing, again, a visual joke that I really enjoyed is, it started out as like a Johnny Quest parody, and then they added things. One of the things they added to the mix was G.I. Joe, and we've talked about OSI, which is one of the organizations in the G.I. Joe parody part of it. And eventually another one pops up called Sphinx, which is kind of like G.I. Joe Cobra stuff in that everything is themed to the Egyptian stuff, including when somebody has to leave the big Sphinx floating aircraft carrier thing, they have to go into a sarcophagus as a dropship, and they get shot out of the Sphinx mouth somewhere. It is so stupid. Anyways, we're going long on this. I love it so much. I say we start voting on it. Yes. Let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting, the uninitiated of us, do you think this episode is canon worthy? By the way, I will say I enjoyed you watching, or rather listening to, the Rusty Venture clip a second time, because I had to go to lengths to hunt down the uncensored version, because you get a censored version on Max, and it's a shame.
Yes.
Anyways, what do you think about this?
The censored version is actually funnier, because the bleeps just, like, I don't know, level it up, in my opinion. But the uncut version, get it, is pretty funny. And if only because it introduced the phrase, thanks, Wikipenis, to my vocabulary rotation. Yes, I believe that this is canon worthy. Thank you very much, Aaron.
All right, Andrew, what do you say?
Definitely. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes.
Me too. So.
Shh.
That means that the Venture Brothers Season 4, Episode 16, Operation PROM, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's sort of twofold. JFK, the person who will be the subject of a Netflix limited series from the co-writer of Killers of the Flower Moon, Eric Roth. Killers of the Flower Moon getting good reviews, and JFK guaranteed eyeball magnet for a certain crackpotty segment of the population, including myself and Mr. Oliver Stone. There's a docuseries called Citizen Stone. It is in post right now. They're being kind of coy about when it's hitting anywhere, but I mean, the 60th anniversary is coming up next month, so probably sure. Then. That's my guess.
I have this week's loser, and the loser is results-driven on TV channel guide grids as the second season of the Daryl Walking Dead spinoff gains not only OG actor Melissa McBride, but changes its name from The Walking Dead : Daryl Dixon to The Walking Dead : Daryl Dixon - The Book of Carol. Uh-huh. That's a 9-word, 51-character title for those keeping track at home. You can't fit that in your TV guide. No. All you're going to see is The Walking Dead, and you don't know which one it is. Mm-mm. Madness.
No.
Madness. All right, guys, speaking about madness, you know what time it is?
Gotta be game time.
Game time. It is still early days here in this game time season. It is only the second game. Season scores are Tara with one, everybody else looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Broadcast,
hey!
Which I drafted with the help of the amazing crew at EHG Assist. Thank you guys so much. In Broadcast, I will ask you TV-related questions whose answers all start with the letter B. You must answer in enthusiastic bosh style for every word in the answer that starts with a B. Mm-hmm. Failure to do so will result in punishment.
Okay.
Tara, I want to keep track of points, 1 point apiece, but also any punishments I dole out. Here's an example. What network aired the program originally called The Great British Bake Off?
BBC.
Correct. Yes. All the answers will follow that. Straight general TV trivia. You know it or you don't. I'm going to go fast. So be quick and be correct. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. That's pretty fitting. Sarah will go first. Then we'll go to Andrew. Then Tara.
Yep.
No steel meals today. Are we ready to play Broadcast?
Yeah, I'm going to say if you turn this off for your kids, turn it back on. Let them listen to this part. They will find it amusing.
All right. I had a optional on-air attribution column in when people from at ESG Assist were helping me with questions and answers. Hardly anyone used it, but I just want to give credit to the team, usually, which is weird because usually they're all about it. Hmm. But I will shout out DRC and Mike M., who did put their names in for their collective contributions. All right, let's get to it.
Thank you.
Bunting, remember, answers only, or you're in trouble, and enthusiastic. I don't want to hear Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting, a horse is a horse, of course, but this one is a self-loathing mess.
Bojack Horseman.
Correct. Andrew. A kid goes through adolescence, and Mr. Feeney keeps changing schools with him. What show are we talking about?
Is it Saved by the Bell?
No, incorrect. Wait, the answer will start with a B, so you have that piece of information. But we're looking for Boy Meets World. So one wrong answer so far, one right answer to Tara.
Yep.
Laid-back 70s New York City cop show with a funky, funky theme. Barney Miller. Back to Sarah. A voice actor and single mom raises three kids in Los Angeles. Running out of time.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm blanking.
Nah.
I like that. I'm going to give you a Dave point for that. We're looking for better things.
Oh, right.
To Andrew, actress who played the Beeves' mom and was fluent in jive.
Oh, that's brutal.
It's hard because Andrew's is a baby.
Oh, I know exactly the thing, and I don't know the name.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he's not going to know anybody.
Barbara Billingsley.
Yeah, all right. Sarah did it correctly. Tara didn't. Tara, you get one punishment point, even though it wasn't your question.
What?
I want to hear enthusiastic bees. Barbara Billingsley.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
All right. Tara's got one punishment point.
It's noted.
Now, here is your question, Tara.
Yes.
This actress spent 5 years in the 60s doing bottle episodes.
Barbara Eden.
Yes, I Dream of Jeannie. All episodes were bottle episodes, you see. Yeah. Delicious. Sarah D. Bunting. Common to King Tut, Siren, Nora Clavicle, Lily the Lilac, and Shame.
Can I hear the list again, please?
Common to King Tut, Siren, Nora Clavicle, Louis the Lilac, and Shame.
I don't know this one. Sorry.
Batman.
Oh.
Back to Andrew. Deanna Troi's home planet on Star Trek Next Generation.
Beta Z
is correct. Tara.
Yes.
Danny and Amy are not cows in this show. Beef.
Damn it.
Sarah, always take him.
Backup
is correct. To Andrew. Aho, William Knife Man is the spirit guide for this young warrior.
I don't know.
Anybody?
Bear
from Reservation Dogs is correct. No. Back to Tara. Beach, boobs, and Mitch Buchanan.
Baywatch.
Sarah D. Bunting, butler, and lieutenant governor.
Oh, thank you, Picky. Benson.
Andrew, beats, bears.
Battlestar Galactica.
Correct. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Bounty hunter and Bacta tank enthusiast.
Oh, no. I don't know.
Anybody?
Boba Fett.
Yeah, oh. That was an enthusiastic one punishment point for Andrew. He risked it to get the kudos knowing the answer, but I heard Boba Fett. All right.
Yeah, can't muster the enthusiasm.
I was going to say, that's just how it feels about the show.
Well, that's your problem now. You have a punishment point. All right. Sarah D. Bunting. Chip is a rodeo clown with French aspirations.
Chip is a rodeo clown. God. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Baskets. All right, this is question 17. It is for Andrew. Dre and Bo are the parents on this long-running sitcom.
Blackish.
Blackish is correct. Tara.
Yes.
Creepy Hanna-Barbera live-action musicians. They're in the air and everywhere. One of our tougher questions, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bugaloos.
Oh,
Sarah D. Bunting. Cinnamon Toast and Crunch's alter ego. That was question 19.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
You are correct. To Andrew, Dredderick Tatum, Tony Banta, and Dennis Cuddy Wise.
Boxers.
Boxers is correct. Tara.
Yes.
Eastbound and Down, Brockmire, and Pitch.
Baseball.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting, Ellen DeGeneres created and produced this talk show for a Real Housewife.
I don't know.
Anybody?
Bethany.
Oh, I got you. Another punchment boy for Tara. Bethany is correct. Back to Andrew. Favorite exclamation of Jason Mendoza. Starts with a B. He's searching. He's watching a show in his mind, but he can't pull it. He can't do it. We're calling him a
this
diamond.
This is embarrassing.
Anybody? Bortles.
Bortles.
Bortles. I could only think of the team. Damn it.
Yes.
Flegal, Bingo, Drooper, and Snorky.
Burfs. I don't know.
Banana splits. Sarah D. Bunting. Prehistoric stand-in for trouble in Cockney slang.
Barney Rubble.
Barney. Yes, Barney Rubble. Trouble. Back to Andrew. Helpful holodeck pal who's tried to kill the members of the USS Cerritos.
Badgie
is correct. Tara,
yes.
My favorite one in the game.
Oh.
Gemstones produce game show.
Billy's Bible Bonkers.
All right, we'll give you Dave point for that one. Baby Billy's Bible Bonkers. Back to Sarah.
Gorgeous.
How's Pete doing? Not great.
Bob.
Andrew, hitman turns actor, winds up killing people anyways.
Barry.
Correct. Tara,
yep.
If it's the dawn of the third age of mankind 10 years after the Earth Menbari War, what are you watching?
Bullshit. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like some kind of bullshit to me.
Babylon 5.
I wondered if it was.
I stand by my answer.
That bitch.
All right, I'm going to give you a date point for that one. Maybe laugh. All right, Sarah D. Bunting. In season one of Only Murders in the Building, Jan, Charles's love interest, played this instrument.
Oh, the bassoon?
Yes, correct. Andrew, weren't there three Indians last year?
Bonanza.
Yes, correct. Tara.
Yeah.
Killface thinks Xander Cruz is his best friend and this title character.
Barnaby Jones.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting in Lost, Locke describes this game to Walt as two sides. One is light, one is dark.
Backgammon?
Backgammon. One punishment point for lackluster answer, but the
insufficient enthusiasm. Lost.
The content was correct. Andrew. Last name of the producer of NYPD Blue.
Bobochko?
Yes, Bobochko. This will take us into our score break. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Legally not Sam Malone grumps around in the Bronx. In the Bronx.
Becker.
Becker is correct. All right, guys, we are over the halfway point. Let's get them scores.
Okay, well, I'm behind with 6. Andrew and Sarah are currently tied with 8.
Oh, a rare appearance for Tara Ariano in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
Oh.
Before we get into there, what's her punishment?
Okay, well, I have 2 punishment points, whereas my opponents each have 1.
All right, Tara, let's get into it. All right, I
Hello,
hold
Tara.
In my hand the original 80s TV set. You know the drill. I'm going to run down card, give you all the categories you answer.
Okay.
If you get 3 of them right, I will give you 2 points. If you sweep the board, I will give you 4. Here we go. Classics. What 4 words did Ralph Cramden say to Alice at the end of almost every Honeymooners episode?
To the moon, Alice.
Incorrect. Baby, you're the greatest.
Oh.
Sitcom.
Yep.
Who wowed them in Mayberry by pulling an egg out of a milk bottle with his hand?
Barney Fife.
You are correct. We're taking off 1 point. we're giving you a punishment point.
Shit.
Drama.
Yep.
What intergalactic hero's robot chum answers to Twiki?
Oh, Buck Rogers.
You are correct. 2 correct.
Okay,
Kids and Games. Who succeeded Gary Owens as the host of The Gong Show?
Oh, no. Chuck Barris.
Yes.
Yeah,
all right, there's
it 3. Is.
And
you, did
you,
it.
Can't get, you can't sweep, but we'll just
no,
play
I
them
can't.
Quickly. What British comedian specialized in ogling simply dressed beauties
and
cracking
Hill.
Double entendres, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And wild card, what sitcom's off-herd line, Hi Bob, inspired college chug-a-lug contests?
Bob, Newhart Show.
Yeah, you are correct. All right, you had five. So close to a sweep, but you still get two extra points. So quickly update them, of course.
Well, we're now all tied up with 8 points each.
Nice. All right, let's get
right. But I'm way behind in punishment.
Well, we'll see how that goes at the end of the game. All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting. Remember, answers start with B, and I want to hear that Bosch energy. He's legend. Wait for it. Derry.
I don't know. Sorry.
Anybody?
Barney from How I Met Your Mother.
Barney Stinson from How I Met Your Mother is the answer there. Back to Andrew. Mother boy contestant.
Buster. Blues.
Yes, correct. Tara.
Yes.
New Jersey's Gentleman Club and Legitimate Business.
Bing.
Yes, you are correct. Sarah D. Bunting. In Once More with Feeling, she's going through the motions.
Buffy.
Correct. Andrew, one of the best-selling commemorative license plates at Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Bort.
Bort is correct. Tara.
Yes.
Preeminent Muppet scientist.
Beaker.
No, he is the assistant. Bunsen Honeydew. Incorrect. Sarah D. Bunting. Prosecutor chases finance guys. Complications ensue.
Billion.
You are correct. Andrew, reality show about plastic surgery gone awry. Date point.
I don't know.
Botched.
Oh, God.
Tara.
Yeah.
Regency era, London, and lots of butts.
Bridgerton.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. She was the only person brave enough to ask Katharine Hepburn what kind of tree she was.
Oh, my God.
We're looking for Barbara Walters.
Oh.
Back to Andrew. Shitty boyfriend and husband felled by a Peloton. Any idea? Starts with the B, shaking his head. He don't know. Anybody?
Big.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Regent, frustrated with the committee's progress and excuses getting Ken's Operation Hell on Earth off the ground, yells, soon, you're a what?
Balloon
is correct. Sarah. Show featuring a Manhattan ADA and a guy who lives underground.
And a guy who lives underground?
Uh-huh. One of my mom's favorites.
Yeah, Place It in Time. One of her mom's favorites.
Yep.
Yikes. I don't know.
Beauty and the Beast.
You're correct.
With Ron Perlman, my mother.
I was like,
Beast that show.
Andrew, her brother says whoa a lot.
I'm on a cold streak. I don't know.
Anybody?
Blossom.
Blossom. Correct. Tara.
Yeah.
Breakout character among the sweat hogs.
Barbarino.
Correct. Sarah D. Bunting. The channel where you can find old matches of Match Game and Classic Concentration.
Classic Concentration? I don't know. Sorry.
Buzzer without an E at the end.
Web
2.0 spelling. Buzzer. Andrew, the events of The Witcher are set into motion after the law of surprise is invoked, where Geralt is granted one of these from Dunny.
First of all, it's Geralt. Has
Geralt.
Big fan.
Yeah, big fan. Lovely.
Is it a like a baboon?
Baboon!
Hey!
Oh, nice. Okay.
Oh,
Tara.
Nice.
Yeah.
The first season of Bob's Burgers episode Art Crawl features a lot of animal paintings with these on them.
Buttholes.
Buttholes. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting, the forensic anthropologist in the FBI lab.
Bones.
Bones. Correct.
Finally.
The game show Gambit is based on this casino game, Andrew.
Baccarat?
You went too fancy. Blackjack.
Oh.
Okay, there you go.
Tara.
That's what I thought too. Yes.
The host of Tattletales and Super Password.
Oh, God. Eubanks? I don't know.
Anybody know?
Is that a person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Burt Convy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was like, Big Martindale?
All right, Sarah D. Bunting. The upcoming Netflix period dramedy, The Decameron, concerns 14th century Italian nobles moving to the countryside to escape this.
Bubonic plague!
I was expecting a Boccaccio.
Also was accepted. Black Death!
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, there's always money in this boardwalk business.
The banana stand.
Correct. Tara, they sing the theme song to Big Bang Theory.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Sarah, this 1976 cartoon character is just sitting on Capitol Hill and is just a what?
Bill.
Andrew, Sheldon Cooper's catchphrase.
Bazinga.
Correct. Tara, this show featured Dabney Coleman as a gruff and annoying talk show host.
Buffalo, Bill.
Yes, got both of them. Well done. Sarah D. Bunting, getting towards the end. Widower to Vera, husband to Anna, hated by David T. Cole.
Husband to Anna, hated by David T. Cole. Don't know.
Anybody?
Bates.
Bates from Downton Abbey. Yes.
Oh.
Andrew. Right. Abandoned factory owner, clown assistant, and burlesque house greeter.
Bart Simpson.
Bart Simpson is correct. All right. Everybody has just a couple questions left, so make them count.
Okay.
Tara Ariano.
Yep.
Mid-run dick swapper.
What?
Mid-run dick swapper.
Dick swapper?
Yeah.
At the P?
Yeah. And is this mine? Yes, it is.
I do not know.
Anybody? Bewitched.
Oh, God.
God.
I rewrote somebody's question to those four words.
Sure.
I'm sorry, like, that one person, but I couldn't resist.
David Bukovny.
All right. You've got three regular questions left.
Okay.
And then three special questions.
Well,
got
it's
two left.
Do you want a score break? It's
Let's
very
do
close.
The score break.
Sarah has 13. Andrew has 14. I have 15.
All right. It's anybody's game. Let's get back to it. Sarah D. Bunting. Turns out this fun guy was less so when he wasn't heavily drinking.
When he wasn't heavily
Yeah, this is probably what Tara would have liked to have, but she's shaking her head, doesn't know. Turns out this fun guy was less so when he wasn't heavily drinking.
Bob Fosse.
Oh, you're so... I thought you had it. We're talking Friends. We're talking Bobby.
Oh, Fun Bobby.
Fun Bobby from Friends. All right, Andrew. What the snow in Jon Snow signified on Game of Thrones?
Bastard.
Bastard. Correct. Tara, here's your last single point question.
Yep.
Show with Hitchcock, but not that Hitchcock.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
You are correct. All right. Everybody's last question is coming at you.
Okay.
These questions have two possible answers. Provide them both for 2 points.
Okay.
Are you ready? Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
The most annoying twin in Beverly Hills.
Brenda Wash or Brandon Walsh.
You are correct. 2 points. Andrew, this Australian puppy has a dad named Bandit.
Bluey and Bingo.
You are correct. 2 points. Aww. Tara, can you also get 2 points? Robert Conrad starring World War II show.
Black Sheep.
And also known as...
Oh, God. Bogan's Heroes. I don't know what the other one is.
Got one of them. We had Ba-Ba Black Sheep, which is sort of what it started out as. But most people know it as Black Sheep Squadron.
Okay.
All right, let's get the scores. That is regulation.
Okay. We all finished strong. Sarah has 15. Andrew and I are tied with 17.
All right, it's going to come down to this. Let me hear the punishment points, please.
Okay, Sarah had one. Andrew had one. I had three.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting,
Oh, also there were Dave points. I don't know if you want
to. The Dave points are fine.
Okay.
Sarah, I'm going to have you allot your one punishment point to somebody else at this Dave point.
I don't know what punishment points involve. So in order to even things up, I'm going to give it to Andrew.
Okay, so what is our final punishment point tally, please, Tara, given that?
Our final punishment point is Sarah has 0, yeah. Andrew has 2, I have 3.
All right, here we go. Are you ready, Andrew?
Yes.
This is how it's going to work then. We're multiplying punishment points by 10, and now I want that as a b-b-b-b-b-bosh. Oh. So I want to hear b-b-b-b-b until you get near the 20 seconds. I'll give you a thumbs up when you're at 19 seconds. You can finish it up. Okay. Unbroken b-b-b-b-b-b-b-bosh for 20 seconds. Okay. Andrew, are you ready?
Sure.
3, 2, 1, go. Yes, nicely done.
There, the most annoying thing I've ever recorded. I did it.
Andrew, it was very nice having you for your last appearance ever. You will definitely say no if we ever ask you again.
Tara.
Okay.
You have 3 punishment points, which means I now want a 30-second bosh. 3, 2, 1, go.
I'm out.
You got 10 points. Oh, she's out. No, it's too late. Those were barely bees anyways. Andrew is the winner today for doing better b-b-boshes.
Undisputable.
Oh.
Valued guess.
You earned that.
Woo. All about breath control.
It was. Absolutely. It was impressive. You were like a metronome. Just perfect. All right, guys.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Truly.
Thank you for putting up with that stupid game.
Oh, absolutely.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We watched the Frasier revival, and now we don't know what to do with these tossed salads and scrambled eggs either. We went around the dial with stops at Shining Vale, Home Movies, American Horror Story, The Devil's Plan, and The Fall of the House of Usher. We said go Team Venture for Aaron's Operation Prom Cannon pitch, and we crowned winners and losers of the week before Andrew took game time. Thank you again at EHG Assist Team. Next up, Sarah, please hit us once again.
Ba-boo-bosh!
Legacy on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. And next week on this show, it's something else. I didn't write it down.
Bodies. Bodies.
Bodies. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arianna.
Boston.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Piss off, crapo.
And Andrew Cunningham.
Andrew's left the building.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here. Extra. Hot great.
They're gone.
Oh, yes. Oh, there's that hug.
Gone, but not forgotten. Perhaps they'll reunite again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit 1 per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn.
and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.